This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. Much to talk about with the ex-governor, the four-term leader of Louisiana. He'll have a major appearance at the LSU Union this week with Larry King. And also, as we know, last month at the age of 86, Edwin Edwards became a father for the fifth time. Also, major event coming this weekend involving the A.P. Turow Sr. Black Alumni Chapter Reunion at the Manship Theater. We'll discuss it with Perry Franklin, who is a chapter member. It was on September 18, 1953, that Turow became the first African-American undergraduate student to enroll at LSU. We'll discuss it, but now we pause for the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Come Sunday, as we heard from Larry King yesterday, the world's greatest interviewer will go toe-to-toe with one of the great interviewees of this time or any time, Edwin Washington Edwards, four-term former governor of Louisiana, who is with us this morning. Good morning, Governor. Happy birthday belatedly. And
thank you.
Last month also brought the arrival of Eli Wallace Edwards. How is young Eli doing?
He's doing fine. His mother's feeding him as we speak.
And at 86, Larry King yesterday was marveling at what you've done. He fathered his last child at 67. It was something you obviously gave a lot of thought to.
Yes, we did. But, you know, if this situation is not unique, it's certainly very unusual. But we're very happy and very pleased, and he's the baby's doing very good and has gained several pounds since his birth, and it's difficult to explain how an 86-year-old man could feel as good as I feel about having a child. And we're very fortunate because he's a beautiful young boy, and he's very healthy, and has all of the natural facilities and factors that good babies have, and we're just very fortunate.
You first did this more than 63 years ago. Not many people have children 63 or 64 years apart, but you've done it. My goodness, you already hold the record for most years served as Louisiana governor by double anybody else, but this is something that's probably, quite possibly a Guinness record.
Well, it could be, and of course, we didn't do it for that purpose, as you know. The main thing, of course, is that I'm in good health. I've been able to do my share of caring for little Eli, and I just love being with him. And let me tell you that when you're young and busy and occupied with all making a living, et cetera, et cetera, sometimes fathers don't pay as much attention to their babies as they should. And in a lot of respects, maybe I didn't. But this time I have a little more time and a greater realization of the shortness of life, and it's just good to know that at the end of my life I've helped bring someone into the life, which is going to make a positive contribution to whatever good I've done in the world.
Governor, does Eli resemble you or Trina more?
Well, I think he resembles me the most, but that's all. If it had been a little girl, I would have been very disappointed had she not looked like her mother. But it's okay. Eli seems to have some of my better qualities, and he also has the beautiful eyes of his mother. So It's a great combination. Circumstances, fate, our Creator was very, very kind to us in helping us to bring this child into the world.
Independent of age, did you have any misgivings about bringing a child into a world as uncertain as the one in which we live?
Yes. the same uncertainty that some people expressed about a man my age having a child would bring someone into the world and probably not see him graduate, if, even if I would see him enter school. But on the other hand, if I didn't bring the child into the world, he wouldn't, he'd never have an existence. There'd be no such person. So you just, life is very uncertain. I live in a house that was built by a young man who had three children under 10 years old when he was tragically killed in an accident. You just never know. I mean, I expect to live at least until I'm 100 years old, because I'm in very good health and I don't have any complaints. I'm very thankful for the for my life, and I'm very thankful for the fact that at my age I can walk up and down stairs, I can run short distances, I don't have any physical disabilities, and my mind is still not as sharp as it once was, but very good for my age.
You first took the oath of office as governor more than 41 years ago, May 9th, 1972. Since then, you've been governor 16 years, and some other people have held the position for 25 years. Who's been the best governor other than you over the last 40 years?
Oh, that's hard to say. You know, Kathleen had that horrible tragedy of Katrina happen on her tour of duty. Had it not been for that, she undoubtedly would have been reelected a second time because she was doing very well. I don't know. I guess each of us serves according to our abilities and according to the opportunities and challenges of his or her time.
But you've had Romer and Foster and Treen and Jindal and Blanco. No standouts among those?
No, not really. I've reached a point in life where I don't like to be critical of, and, you know, I could say some things that disappointed me in some or all of them, but that's not important at this time. I'm convinced that each did the best he could under the circumstances, and while I would have done things different in many instances, who knows? Circumstances might have been different.
Edwin Edwards served in Congress for many years. What do you make of what's going on right now in Syria? Should the U.S. launch a military attack?
Look, I'm sure there's a lot about that that I don't know. But my answer is that's none of our business. I regret whatever they say happened or actually did happen, but we just can't continue policing the world. We're spending billions of dollars and the lives and bloods and limbs of fine young men and women in conflicts that, frankly, I think are never-ending, as the Afghanistan war is never-ending, it appears to be. And I don't think we'll do any better than any of the four or five countries that have tried to conquer them in the past 2,000 years. They're not like we are. They have a different religion. They have a different attitude. There's a different culture. They don't like us. I don't think they ever will. And let me say this. Most of those people are wonderful, fine people. Unfortunately, they have extremists in their groups who are willing to do violence to other people in some kind of holy war, which they call a jihad. And I don't understand it. And my point is, if we continue to bankrupt ourselves, we do not do ourselves or the rest of the world any favor, because as the leader of the world, we need to remain strong and viable and economically healthy ourselves.
You served in Congress 7 years. Did you like Washington?
Not at all. The weather's very muggy, and in the summertime it's very hot, and in the wintertime it's very cold. It was my first experience with real congested traffic. I couldn't get used to the fact that I didn't have Cajun food to eat. The food in Louisiana is just so superior to anywhere else in the world that I've been, and I've been around the world six times. Nevertheless, I didn't like the slow pace of Washington, but I will say this. Although there were Democrats and Republicans, we got along. We had principled compromise. When problems came, we met, we consulted both sides, and we reached conclusions, and we made things happen. rather than this constant stalemate that we now see in Washington.
You served under Presidents Johnson and Nixon. Did you like them?
Oh, very much. Johnson in particular. Johnson, of course, is from Texas. I'm from Louisiana. I was the first member of Congress elected after he beat Goldwater. And my principal opponent in the race was a young man who had been Goldwater's campaign manager, and I had been Johnson's. And so the national press played it as a rerun of the presidential election. And when the election was over with, I was in my office one day, and President Johnson called me to congratulate me, and he said, you know, it made me look good because the national press made it look like it was a rerun of our race.
Governor, we're going to take a short break, and we will return with the remarkable Edwin Edwards after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we resume our conversation with former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. As we noted in the first segment, another EWE has begun life in a grand way. Eli Wallace Edwards just celebrated his one-month birthday, and Edwin Washington Edwards at 86 is full of vim and vigor, as I think he's holding Eli right now, and come Sunday he will be with Larry King at the LSU Union, 4:30 p.m. This is a magnificent occurrence for a man who many do not know, Governor. You served in World War II.
Yes, but only briefly. I was when I became 17 years old, I volunteered during World War II. And I was taking flight training in the Navy in Livermore, California, when the war ended. And they disbanded our class and sent me home. Fortunately, while I learned to fly in the service, I didn't have to fight. And I was very fortunate in that regard. But I did step up to the plate as soon as I was 17 years old. And I just can't tell you how much I admire and respect people who serve in the armed forces of our country. They're so very important to us, and I just grieve whenever I hear of a person dying or coming back with a horrible wound from some kind of a conflict. And I guess it's the same thing in one way, but it just seems to me a lot more wasteful that people die. Something like 5,000 have died in Afghanistan, and some 50,000 have been injured in what I think is just an unnecessary, silly war at this time. After we killed Osama bin Laden, our business there was over with, and we should have come home and taken care of our own needs.
Now, yesterday when we talked to Larry King, he said he was quite eager to talk with you. Believe it or not, these two gentlemen have never met, and it will be, I'm sure, quite a discussion at the Union with Edwin Edwards, Larry King, and Leo Honeycutt. Now, Edwin Edwards, Larry King holds views similar to yours regarding life after death or lack thereof. He says he wants to be frozen when his time comes. So what would you like?
Revived.
That's pretty good.
I don't know. I certainly don't want to be cremated, although many people view that as the way to go, but I suppose, and I don't think anything about being frozen and hope to come back to life has any validity. I mean, some people believe that, but I just think that when you're dead, you're dead, and what you better do, and what I've tried to do, maybe not successfully, but what I've tried to do is live my life so that when I died, I would have no regrets, and more people would mourn my passing than cheer. So, you know, death is an integral part of living. You're born, you live, you die. The thing to do is make sure that the time you spend in this world, short or long, is spent in service to others and that you can die with a clear conscience. And whether you believe it or not, I can. I have never deliberately or intentionally hurt anybody. I feel good about myself, and I sleep well at night. And let me just say this. It sounds kind of strange, but death has no fear for me. I'm not afraid to die, but I just don't want to give up living. Life has been so good to me, so pleasant, so wonderful in this country, and people have been so kind and helpful and supportive in all my life. I just can't tell you how fortunate I feel that I've lived the kind of life that I've had. I haven't had 50 headaches in my whole life. I had a heart problem, but that's been taken care of. And at 86, I still feel good. I'm just very, very thankful for the life that I've had and then the life that I now have. And as I look down at Eli, it just makes me appreciate life all the more. And I feel that I have made yet another contribution to the welfare of mankind. I just hope that my little boy will grow up and be of service to somebody and make somebody else's life just a little bit better because he happened to be here.
This is a question that Leo Honeycutt posed this morning over breakfast at Louie's. He says, Edwin Edwards, if you die and you find out suddenly that things are a little different after death than you thought and there's a God waiting for you and you have to go to plan B, what will you tell God?
I'll tell him, look, I'm not going to tell you anything, God, because you know everything there is to know. I just hope you'll forgive me for what I did wrong and spend a little time trying to find some things that I did right.
Let's, JC, can you tell me who is on line three, and we will try to slide at least one call in for Governor Edwards and then let him get back to Eli and Trina and his beautiful family. Paul, good morning, Paul. You're on the air with Governor Edwin Washington Edwards.
How you doing? Good morning, Mr. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. One of my uncles used to work for you. His name was Pop, Mr. Knockoff. So I know a lot about, you know.
All right, well, what's your question, Paul?
My question is this. Governor, if you were offered to teach a political class, would you take it?
Would you like to be a teacher? Would you like to be a teacher, Governor? Would you teach a political class somewhere if you were offered the opportunity?
Yes, I would. While I've made mistakes, as any human being will do in any human endeavor, I have a great deal of experience. I've run for public office 25 different times, and also I've held offices at this local, state, and national level, and in the legislative, judicial, and executive branches. And I think there's something that I can offer. Maybe pointing the way not to go, or maybe offering some advice to some person interested in political affairs. But I would like to do that, but it would have to be with a group of people who have some interest in it. I do not view myself as being the kind of missionary to go out trying to encourage people to get in politics, because I never do that. But those who have that calling, and it is a calling, then I would be happy to share with them whatever experiences, bitter and pleasant, that I've had during my life.
Well, Governor, we thank you for joining us today, and good luck Sunday, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Jim, and give my regards to the audience, and I'm looking forward to the show because Larry King has been a person I've admired for many, many years, and I'm anxious to get to see and know him on a first-name basis.
Well, thank you, Governor. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And a special treat, in addition to the one we just had, joining us in studio is a gentleman, A.P. Turo, Jr., along with Perry Franklin, and they are involved in a major event involving black graduates of the University of Louisiana State University and A.P. Turo, Jr. on September 18th, 60 years ago, 1953, became the first African-American undergraduate to enroll at LSU. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. 60 years ago, how was it on campus at that time?
Quite miserable, actually. I'm glad that I've had time to live through reconciliation and seeing so many people attend LSU on the undergraduate level, and the change in the university, the change in the societal regulations regarding race and segregation, and to be able to celebrate this weekend 60 years of being out of LSU, and black alumni chapter that's interested in furthering the educational opportunities for students at LSU, and to celebrate the culture of the university is a wonderful thing.
You lasted 55 days.
I was there 55 days, and I was glad to get out, and it was not a pleasant experience. It was a selective enrollment. I was not recruited to be there as a test case, but I realized that there was such a strong determination on the part of the state, the university, the students, and the administration for blacks not to be there on the undergraduate level in 1953, that I realized that it was not a place that I could achieve my career goals for college and the dreams that I had for college. So I was happy when I had to leave based on a mistrial that required a return to a different court structure. And I was offered the opportunity to go back, but I refused to go back, and I never did go back, and I graduated from Xavier University in 1957.
In those 55 days, what were some of the indignities that you remember?
Well, the indignities were, first of all, disrespectful relationships with faculty, students, and administration, tolerance. Only tolerance, no social interaction, totally alone in a dormitory, room for three people. No one spoke, professors refusing to interact with me, students afraid to interact because they would be socially ostracized. And the continuous legal battle and also the continuous harassment and following of the press, the local paper at the university, the Daily Reveille, just constant negative attention paid to my being there. And for a 17-year-old person who's trying to establish himself in college and figure out where he's going and how to handle the responsibility, it was not the dream that I had.
Which dorm did you live in?
I lived under the stadium. And the other thing that was upsetting, too, was I didn't go to college to be in the ROTC. And that was a requirement then. All freshmen had to be enrolled, and I was in the Air Force. So you lived in a dormitory situation where you had cadet leaders and the military kind of stand and salute and that kind of thing. That's not what I wanted to do, but that was a requirement.
Well, one of your later cohorts, Perry Franklin, is with us, who is part of the Touro chapter at LSU, and this Black Alumni Chapter reunion will take place this Friday at the Manship Theater. Now, Perry Franklin, when did you enroll?
I enrolled in the fall of 1986, a little bit different time than when Mr. Touro enrolled in 53.
Yeah, so 33 years. So by then, LSU had thousands of African-American students. Was there any kind of problem at that point?
Well, great progress had been made. During my tenure as a student, we had made history. Just so happens I'm in the same fraternity as Mr. Touro's father. A.P. Touro Sr. Is an alpha, and I joined the same fraternity. And a little bit of history that was made in the fall of 1989 was that we were the first predominantly historically African-American fraternity to assume a home on Fraternity Row. I would have thought when I go back onto campus, I would have seen the others with a home. We're still the only resident on Fraternity Row. And so while progress is being made, there's still progress to be made.
And the Greek system is still segregated. There, to my knowledge, are very few, if any, blacks in the white fraternities and sororities and no whites in the black.
Well, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. When I was in the undergraduate chapter, we accepted everyone. I pledged several white individuals. A few examples on the other side of the fence, but Alpha Phi Alpha and other.
You did have some.
That's correct.
Some whites, probably more whites in the black fraternity than the other way around.
That would be a correct statement.
How does that happen in 2013?
Well, all you can do is continue to push forward. You know, if you continue to look in the rearview mirror, you make very little progress going forward. And so my philosophy is let's continue to break down those barriers and stand on the shoulders of people like A.P. Touro Sr. and A.P. Touro Jr. If it weren't for them, I don't think we would have the success we have now. LSU, you know, when Mark Emmert was here and enrollment standards were increased, There was fear that we would lose the progress that had been made at LSU. I'm glad to say, however, the graduate percentage of African Americans has increased at Louisiana State University, and the acceptance rates have also increased just a little bit. When I was in school, there was about 8% black enrollment on campus in the mid-80s. There's still about 8%, and so there's room yet to be made. But I would say the graduation rate has probably more than doubled of black undergraduates on campus. So I think that's the ultimate goal, is to not only get people enrolled, and that's the mission of this AP Touro Senior Black Alumni Chapter, is to try to help put a face on LSU that it is a place where you want it and a place where you can excel. So we got to continue to get those black kids enrolled at LSU, but more importantly, get them graduated. And so that's what we're all about.
We'll talk more with A.P. Touro Jr., the first black undergraduate at LSU 60 years ago this month, and Perry Franklin, who enrolled in 1986. They're both part of the black alumni group that will have a major celebration this week. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane producing, and we have some more time with A.P. Touro Jr., the first African-American undergraduate at LSU, and Perry Franklin, who is part of the Touro Alumni Chapter. And come Friday, 7 p.m. at the Manship Theater, there will be a celebration of the Touro Chapter involving black students at Louisiana State University. And the public is invited, 7 o'clock. And Perry, you have the update on many things going on this weekend, including the 7 p.m. affair at the Manship Theater.
Yeah, Jim, this weekend is going to be a great weekend. We're kicking off the first home game of the LSU Fighting Tigers with great festivities. On Friday night, this Friday night, there's going to be a great tribute entitled Here's to You, Mr. Touro, at 7 p.m. at the Manship Theater in downtown Baton Rouge at the Shaw Center. Tickets are on sale. All you have to do is go to the Manship's ticket office or go online to manshiptheater.org. We'd love to see the public come out and to take part in a walk down memory lane in the historical perspective of Louisiana State University. So 7 p.m. this Friday night, that will be followed by a welcome party at 9 p.m. in the Hartley Vay Theater. And then we turn to Saturday morning. Saturday morning, we're going to have some wonderful activities on LSU's campus. On Saturday morning at 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday at the Barnes & Noble LSU Union Square, there will be an LSU Black Alumni book signing. And we have a distinguished guest list and of alumni who will be signing their books. Dr. Elaine Adams, her book is entitled The Reverend Peter W. Clark, Sweet Preacher and Steadfast Reformer. We're going to have Dr. Jinx Coleman Broussard. His book is entitled African American Foreign Correspondence, A History, Media, and Public Affairs. We're going to have alumnus Dr. John S. Butler. His book is entitled All That We Can Be, Black Leadership and Racial Integration the Army Way. And we're going to also have Dr. Rachel Emanuel and A.P. Touro Jr. signing their book, and Dr. Charles Vincent. So that's going to be a great Friday, a great Saturday. There's going to be a tailgate event at 11 a.m. in the LSU Union Theater, and then everyone will go to the game and celebrate and push the Tigers to victory.
Well, A.P. Touro Jr. will go down in history books as one of the pioneers in our state. He's still vibrant at the age of 77, and it's hard to believe it's been 60 years, I'm sure, since 1953. But there you are, the only African-American undergraduate on campus, living on campus, in the stadium, and I lived in the stadium. Didn't have a lot of privacy, did you?
Well, I didn't have privacy. I wanted collegiateship. I wanted to be have a good college experience, and I wanted to make friends with my fellow classmates and guys in the dorm, but they would have no part of it. And it was a very unhappy experience. I was totally isolated. Wherever I went, everybody scattered.
So what happens when you go in the shower?
In the morning you take a shower, you brush your teeth, you shave. If I walked into one of those bathroom installations, with 10 shower heads on the wall, no separation, guys would be soaped up and showering. I walked in, they all walked out, soap and everything. If I was shaving or, at a sink, washing my face, if they were in the process of shaving or brushing their teeth, they'd scoop up all their stuff and walk out. In classrooms, I would always go early, and I would sit in the center of the room. And it would be like a circle around me. People would move the chairs so that they wouldn't be close to me. In the dining hall, I sat by myself, and no one ever joined me. So I would be at a table for 10, and nobody would ever sit at that table. So it was a very unsettling experience. Now, I came from a very social and upward mobile, active family in New Orleans with a lot of social interaction and expectation that college was going to be a great time. And LSU was the biggest disappointment in my life.
How did the professors treat you?
They tolerated my being there. Some of them wouldn't touch my papers. Some of them even spoke about me being there as a Negro in their classroom, not Negro or not colored, a Negro, in my own presence with other students there. And one professor even said she didn't know how she was going to get through this experience because she'd never taught a Negro before. Now, that was kind of like the lowest blow, to have an adult make that kind of accusation, and also in my own presence with my own classmates.
Well, today at LSU, the numbers are not out yet, but as of last year, there were only 52 African-American professors on the campus, less than 4%. For a state that's one-third African-American, Perry and AP, it seems that there's still a good bit of progress remaining to be made at LSU.
Absolutely. You know, we get the question sometimes, why is there a black alumni chapter? And it's for that very reason, that there are topics that are really germane to that topic, if you will, and we need to continue to keep those items in front of the decision makers, that we have to have equity and we have to continue to move the ball forward. While we have enjoyed great strides, there's still more that has to be done. And so we do that in a very amicable fashion. We sit at the table and we help to make decisions. We also help to put a face on the university when we go out and we recruit. We work with the recruiting department, and we go to high schools, and we let these kids see, no, you are welcome, and they are people of your same race and ethnicity that are excelling at Louisiana State University. And so it's going to take all of those efforts to move those indicators forward.
AP?
I speak all over the country about my experiences and what I lived through in Louisiana as a youngster and a student at LSU. People are fascinated by the whole culture of Louisiana, and I think we have something to offer in terms of the historical significance of the civil rights movement and the many things that happened in Louisiana way ahead of other people. I started at LSU in 1953. Authorine Lucy and James Meredith didn't challenge Alabama and Mississippi until many years later. Louisiana has had a tremendous impact on civil rights progress. However, it gets very little coverage nationally and very little coverage within our own state. We should be proud of the progress we have made. We should all be also be very vigilant in trying to increase the integration effort that desegregation had hoped to advance. It isn't really happening a lot in lots of places.
We have integration on the football team, on the basketball team. The football team, as far as players who contribute, is probably about 80% African-American. In 1972, LSU had its first black varsity football player, only 41 years ago. So there's been progress there. Some of these athletic heroes will be featured Friday night, Perry, and it's appropriate because they're a big part of the African-American heritage at Louisiana State University.
But I'd like to just say, Jim, if we recruited faculty and students the way we recruit athletes, we wouldn't have a problem today about large numbers.
Well, why don't we do that?
Well, that's what we're trying to do. But we can't do that alone. We are one alumni chapter of graduates, and many people work towards that goal, but we need the support of the university. We need the support of the public education system that prepares white and black kids to come to the university and be successful. So that's a bigger picture that we all need to be a part of.
And efforts are being made. Recently vacated seat that was held by Dr. Catrice Albert is a movement in LSU's administration, if you will, Vice Provost of Equity and Diversity. That is an outward-facing movement by the university's administration that says we acknowledge and understand and we are investing in making a difference. And so that is something that was started 8-9 years ago. And so those are steps that are being made. And we have to continue those steps under the new leadership of the university to ensure that we don't take any steps backwards. At all indications, we aren't making those backward steps. But it takes everyone, not just a Black Alumni Association, but everyone. Black faculty, staff, and caucus have been at this for decades, and we join mm-hmm. with them. So the leadership is there. It's more than just athletics. It has to be academics and administration and graduation ultimately as well.
Thank you, Perry Franklin. Thank you, A.P. Turow Jr. And come Friday, both of these fine gentlemen will be in the house at the Manship Theater, 7 o'clock, as will I. I have a small role in this, and the hosts of the affair are Sylvia Weatherspoon and Whitney Brose. So it should be quite an evening and an appropriate tribute to A.P. Turow Jr. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us so much, Jim.
Thank you.